Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and a San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Party Foul Radio.
Episode 91.
91. I am your co-host, Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
And it is, in fact, 91. Y'all, I want to say, first of all, our coverage of an interview of Kelly Clarkson went up onto the Huffington Post this past week. The biggest episode in our history, girl.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Over 55,000 listens in 3 days. And that doesn't include the thousands of listens that we'd already had on it.
Right.
Before that went up there. So people are gagging over Kelly Clarkson's new album.
Come on, A-lister.
Yes, and the album is so good. Go out and pick up your copy of Meaning of Life. Download it on all of the online retailers. Whichever one works for you, girl. The album is super good. It is so worth it. And I'm just grateful because this is really cool. So in the interview, Kelly was telling us, because we did it on National Coming Out Day, and she told me about her friend Shane McAnally, who is, he's a 2-time Grammy winner, and he won the Academy of Country Music Songwriter of the Year Award in 2014 for his work. And he's an out artist. He's an out gay man. And she was telling us about how that impacted his career. Well, I wrote that up in our Huff Post coverage, and he's going to be coming on an upcoming episode to talk about his experience. So,
right.
It's going to be, it's just so exciting. So anyway, thank you to the tens and thousands of listeners. There's this thing on Podomatic where episodes, if they hit 100,000 listens or 100,000 downloads, it's like called the 100,000 Club, and I'm hoping we can make the 100,000 Club, girl.
Come on, 100,000 Club.
Yes.
That sounds like special VIP status to some strip club or something, girl.
Exactly right. So, y'all, I'm going to manipulate.
Shit.
I'm going to manipulate the shit out of this, because I'm going to go back and write a second piece about Kelly from the same interview.
And put it in the same one.
And put it up. And
I'll be like, scandalous.
Well, I mean, you know, because it'll attract new people.
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean?
Let's do it, girl.
I'm like, bitch, if we got 50,000 off the first one, a second one might just do the same damn thing for us.
Right.
Because I want the 100,000 Club,
I want the 100,000 Club too, girl. Let's do it.
And I'm thinking to myself, y'all, we've had some episodes like when we had Anthony Bowens up on this. He put us back in the top 10, a nice little spot in the top 10. Mm-hmm. And that was with like 18,000 listens to that particular episode. We got 3 times that. Bitch, I'm hoping we're gunning for number one.
Girl, right. We need to get number one once.
We do. At least once, bitch. So let's do this, ho.
I'm down.
So that is very, very exciting. Pearl, why were you not at Wrestling for Charity to see me wrestle when you said on this show more than once that you were going to be a threat? She wasn't there, y'all.
Girl, I wasn't there. I really wanted to go, but I had a shift at Asia.
Boo. On a Thursday?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you to Landa Lake, Sandra. Oh, no, she didn't. Miso Horne.
Did Albie and them come?
How about those whores did not come?
Oh.
They did not come. Albie Zane.
But girl, you know, it's
Frisco Robbie.
Right.
Neither one of them came, even though they said they were going to. Leandro, thank you for coming. I appreciate that. Just a number of other people.
Girl, you know, I've got to go for your first official match, because I know. So for those of you who haven't seen, it's caused like a big old ruckus online. Everybody's been kind of like joking and chiming in.
I know.
It's everything, girl.
So if you guys have not seen my the video footage that I posted on my YouTube,
Pollo gets knocked out.
Oh.
He sure jacked me up. Look, bitch.
Do you have, like, a little bruise?
Like, this whole area was bruised. You see a cut right down here somewhere?
Ooh, hot.
He cut me. He...
Poyo got cut, bitch. And it wasn't even by me.
I know, right? So, Jekyll's the Jester was there on behalf of the Cold One AC, uh-huh. who I suspended. And I got up in there, and I got all mouthy-like. Next thing I know... Clocked, girl.
And not just clocked, that she was a man.
Damn, Daniel.
Exactly. Okay. That too, bitch. So, done. But, jacked me up with a forearm smash. In the slow motion of it, you can see that this bracelet's like, this one right here was, I was wearing this necklace, which turned into like a fucking brass knucks. He hit me.
Oh my god.
That's why I'm all bruised up and shit and cut. And then you can see in the slow motion, the bracelet's all, ka-ting, ka-ting,
oh my ka-ting. Goodness.
Flew off. My best friend Shigellarella, that fucking bitch, was like, next time you need to wear a whole bunch of jewelry, and if they beat your ass, all the jewelry fly off. You'll look like a drag pinata.
I would live, girl. The audience would go insane.
He jacked me up, but my shoes stayed on.
They sure did stay on. They sure did stay on.
And my hair, too, bitch.
Your hair, yep.
And my sister Kenya Fister, I don't think I mentioned her. They all came out, and my friends from the Portola Neighborhood Association came out to support. Wrestling will be returning. WFC Wrestling will be returning to El Toro Nightclub in the Portola District in January. I think it's going to be January 11th. We haven't set an official date, but you guys will know about it first right here.
But they are having something else. Huh? What's his name that punched you?
Jekyll's the Jester?
Yes. So he sent me a message.
Oh, dear. Oh, my God. Or was that the AC, the cold one?
Yeah, the one, yes.
Sending the message. Oh, he sent you a message.
Yeah, he did. Apparently, you guys are having something in Pacifica, where it's going to carry on the same storyline.
Yes, it's going to be Sunday, December 3rd, in Pacifica, California.
That's the one I need to get tickets to, girl.
It's going
to
be the NorCal Wrestling Hall of Fame show. And Wrestling for Charity will have a championship match. It's a rematch between Sledge, if you watch my YouTube video, go over there. It's YouTube/TheNotoriousPDM, and you can find it. Or just Google Poyo Del Mar Wrestling.
Girl, this shit is better than your next telenovela, girl.
So it's going to be a rematch between the champion and Jekyll's, the guy who hit me, and Sledge, the guy who came to my rescue later on. And they're going to have a rematch for the title. And I'm going to have to be there in Sledge's corner just to make sure that fucking AC doesn't get his... Whatever. he's talking way too much smack. I'm going to have to give him a beat down, that bitch.
Right.
You better send henchmen.
I love it.
You better send your henchmen, bitch. Fucking henchmen.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that had to be... That had to just... You must have lived, girl.
I did.
Your fantasy. Completely.
I know. I got jacked up and beat down, but... I was like, when I was like, all broke down. Oh, this was amazing. Oh, fuck. Oh, God. So.
I can't wait to see you jump off of a turnbuckle in your heels or something.
I'm going to have to do something hella crazy on them.
Do you think they'll put you through training and stuff to actually get into it?
I might not even go through training. I'm going to just get up in there and beat an ass.
Oh, no, girl. Don't get up there and look like your drag numbers. Get in there and put in some work.
Oh, no. No, she didn't. Foolishness. Foolishness.
So, Poyo went on a date recently, you guys. And I've been waiting for this tea because how are you just going to spill a little tea? So, Pearl. She hits me up on Twitter, you guys. I went on a date. And I was like, with who? And, girl, all she did was like the comment or like the reply. How do you just like the reply, bitch? They made everybody in suspense.
Uh-huh. Well, if you listened to last episode, I spilled all my fucking drama about my emotional breakup with the person who's not even my boyfriend.
Right.
But this is cute. But you know what? The thing about doing that, and this is what I talked about this with some friends the next day after we put that episode out and everything. And just acknowledging what was really going on for me emotionally in regards to that was kind of freeing. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, because I'd been sort of holding it in and holding on to this, like, fantasy relationship with my friend, who I'm still friends with, even though I say we broke up. We're still friends. And in fact, we hung out today. And I care very much about him. And I, like, if he came to me and was like, I'm really into you, I'd probably like be like, okay. But but I don't
come on, we're keeping it real.
Like, yeah, for real. I mean, you know, it's not like I told the story and then all my feelings for him went away.
Do you know if he listened to that podcast?
He did not, but he did listen to the Kelly Clarkson one, and I'm so glad he did not listen to last week's episode, because I'd be mortified. But in many regards, even though I've told him all that stuff, you know, but anyway, so what it did is it kind of freed me up emotionally, and it also freed up the fact, or brought to my attention.
It kind of made, it's kind of like therapy. It, like, speaking about it and saying it out loud kind of forces you to deal with it emotionally.
Yeah, absolutely.
And internally.
And one of the things that, one of the things that I got from that conversation was that I became really aware that because of my interest in mono, I have not been even accepting other people's interest in me or pursuing it. So if you are a regular listener, you will probably remember a few episodes back where I talked about how I had been hit up on like Tinder, I think it was Tinder, by
the hoe apps.
Well, it's not a hoe app.
It's a hoe app, girl.
It's not a hoe app. Anyway, I've been hit up on Tinder by a local person who's a principal of a school. Remember?
That's right. That's right.
So he and I have been messaging for like 5 weeks now. Texting. Not on the app. Like texting. Right.
He was the one who was like, come over.
Yes,
and
you were
like, no.
Yes, exactly right. Because he was like, come over and just hang out and cuddle and watch TV or whatever. I was like,
And then he started talking about self-control.
At midnight? I don't think so, hunty.
Right, you tried it.
No, you really tried it. I'm not doing that. So we've been trying to meet up, but our schedules are not compatible. Well, as it turned out, I sent him a text on Sunday morning, and I was like, hey, I'm going to the Castro, and I have a few hours free before I have to go to all these events. Like, if you're in the Castro, why don't we meet up?
Uh-huh.
So he messaged me. He's like, I'm in the Castro. Let's hang out. Well, so y'all hear I'm a judgmental Judy because, like, he works and then he goes out to bars and whatever and hangs out. Well, I should take into consideration that he moved here like 6 months ago. He doesn't know a lot of people.
Yeah.
So he just sort of like hangs out, hoping presumably to meet people. You know what I mean? Like, but to me, what that says is like, you are either at work or you're hanging out at these bars, and that's really not what I want to do with my time. So I literally told a friend of mine right before I went to hang out or to meet up with him that I said, yeah, there's this guy. He's really cute. And we've been talking, but I'm just going to go meet up with him, say hi, and then I got to go on my way. I don't think anything's going to come of this because it just, my gut says it's not a thing. Well, so I went over.
And this is your gut before you've even met him.
Right. Because, well, I mean, I think that
no
you can.
No comment, but like, go ahead.
I think that you can pick up on red flags just from cues.
I guess so. It depends how much you're actually talking to the person.
Yeah, we were like, you know, we were interacting quite
a lot.
But
even then, if not having met him, you don't really know how this person, you know. Anyway.
And I did take that into consideration. I'm not saying that obviously I hadn't written him off because I still went. So I went into the mix in the Castro and I was looking for him, but I got distracted because as soon as I walked in, I knew like 100,000 people there whatever. And so they were like, hey, girl! So I turn around and he's literally standing right behind me and he's like, hi, girl, he's so cute.
Ah, you wanted to say fine.
He is so cute. but he really is cute. Like he's adorable. Like,
he is cute. He's a cutie.
He's super cute. So I turn around and we're face to face and I'm like, hi. And he's like, hello. So, we sit and we start talking and we strike just a nice little conversation. We're sitting there and then he said something about like getting cozy or whatever, like oh, those people over there look like they're getting cozy.
Uh-huh.
And then like next thing I know his leg was like on touching my leg and then his like hand was like sort of like
already
between us, like not like groping me up, it wasn't like that, but it was like it was kind of like this, like he suddenly moved over and his hand
was trying it, girl.
And so I go, wait a minute, like, is this you getting cozy? Like, you know.
What you said?
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, hold on, is this you getting cozy? And he was like, oh no, I was just like, you know, sort of like, I was just trying to like make sure I could hear you because the music's loud in here or whatever.
Oh my God.
And then I was like, no, it's okay, you can get cozy, like, here, like, go ahead. So
go ahead.
And then, so we talked for like probably about an hour there. Mm-hmm. And then I said, okay, so this is the deal. Like, I have already agreed to do, like, this other event. Uh-huh. And I told a friend I was going to meet him, my friend Leandro. I was like, I'm going to meet him over at this other event at Aunt Charlie's. It was a fundraiser for the Imperial Council. Uh-huh. And with my intentions, I was like, I already told these people I'm coming. I got to go show up. Oh. He didn't know all this drama. But, uh-huh. like, I was like, so this is the tea. I'm enjoying talking to you, but I've got to do this other stuff. If you have nothing else that you have to do and you're interested, you're more than welcome to accompany me. Uh-huh. I was like, I would not hold it against you if you said no. Like,
I would have said no.
Right. A normal person would have. He said yes.
Oh, no.
So
you're never seeing him again.
That's not true. So she's like, oh, no. So I was like, well, let's go. Let's do this. Let's get this out of the way. And then, you know, after this, then if you're still open, like, I don't have anything else on my schedule for the whole day. Mm-hmm. And he's like, neither do I. So I was like, well, let's go down there and then we can figure out what we want to do after this. So we went down to Aunt Charlie's. And this is the cute, this, like, totally was so cute to me. We walked out of the bar, and when we were walking out of the bar, he, like, took my hand. He was holding my hand. And we were walking in the Castro, and then my friend Troy saw us, and I was like,
oh, shit.
I was like, hello. And he's like, hello. And the whole time he was talking to us, he couldn't stop looking at the back. And then, like, our hand, we were holding hands. And
I
then,
love it.
And then we, like, turned to walk away, and, like, we get down the street, and I said to this guy, I was like, I'll be hearing about this probably in like 5, 4, 3. So we ended up going to Aunt Charlie's. We had a great time. We chit-chatted. I won a crown. Please note the crown. I'm going to show you. Hold, please.
Poyo thinks she's actually won a crown compared to me, you guys. It's a tiara.
It's adorable.
It's adorable. It's a really cute tiara.
I won it in a lip sync for your life competition.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so... and we sat there and we ate at Aunt Charlie's. They have fun free food.
So he got to see you lip sync.
He saw me lip sync.
And he still stuck around.
Yes.
Wow.
So, but this was so cute. I was like, he was like, how was your wrestling event? And I said, oh, it was good. And I was like, didn't I send you the video of it? He goes, no, you just sent me this picture of us when we were setting up the ring. I said, oh, uh-huh. My wrestling ring is getting set up. And he's like, so I couldn't tell, like, are you a journalist who covers wrestling and writes about wrestling? Are you, do you work with the wrestlers or are you a drag queen? And I was like, the answer is yes.
All three.
I was like, the answer is yes.
Yes.
So anyway, and he was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Didn't bat an eye, moving right along. So, I lip synced. Of course I wasn't even in drag. So uh-huh. Lip syncing when you're not in drag is extra embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, I mean for you,
for when you're like a guy who's like,
yeah,
not in drag and you're up there, like I was serving it too, bitch. I was
I'm
giving
sure
them
you
every
were,
dancing
girl.
Queen ever.
Oh no.
Cause it was drag roulette and they played Dancing Queen by ABBA.
No dignity, girl.
It didn't matter. I wanted the crown, bitch. So, I wanted that tiara. So
it's a pretty one.
So then we left there and it was so cute because we took Muni. He's like, oh my God, I've never taken Muni before.
Oh my goodness.
And he was like holding my hand and he had his arm around me on the Muni.
Oh,
and
look at her. Look at Poyo just living all her fantasy.
All up in one day.
Right.
So, then we left there and we went to back over to the Castro on the underground. He's like, I've never ridden the underground. He's like, this is all these first time experiences. So I was like, how romantic the first date of you taking the underground.
Uh-huh.
And we went to Midnight Sun and for a Cheer San Francisco Cheer for Life Foundation. Uh-huh. They had a fundraiser there. So he was trying to get extra cozy and like he kept trying to kiss me and I kept saying no and everything.
Oh my goodness.
Finally, I just gave in.
Oh my goodness.
I just dove up in it, bitch. Like Greg Louganis.
Oh, wow.
And then he was like, well, do you want to go back to my house and watch a movie? And I was like, okay, sure.
So did you go back to his house and watch a movie?
We started to watch a movie. The movie was dreadful. And then he was like, let's go and take a nap. And so, girl, he tried it again. I was like, I gotta go to the bathroom. I came out of the bathroom. He was in his underwear in the bed.
Oh my God.
I said, oh, hail to the no. He's like, come in here and lay down with me. And I was like, okay. I had on a sweater and fucking sweatpants. He was like, at least take off your boots. And because I was wearing some knee-high boots. And he's like, at least take off your boots. And I was like, I would, but my feet stink. And he's like, why do your feet stink? I said, because I'm wearing the same socks that I wore yesterday.
Oh, my God.
He's like, why? And I said, because I didn't expect to be getting up in somebody's house. I was like, I thought I was going to meet you and then kick you to the curb.
Oh, my God.
So I went into his bathroom and rubbed some lotion on my feet to make them smell like eucalyptus. And then I fully dressed, got in his bed. And he was like, you don't want to spend the night? I was like, nope.
Yeah, you did.
He's like, you don't want to get naked? I was like, nope.
You don't want to get naked?
He's like, I was like, not on the first date.
I look at Poyo trying to be a lady.
Pearl, I've been telling you, I don't do that stuff. Uh-huh. Like, he was like, he's like, we don't have to do anything. I was like, you're right. We don't have to do anything, including get naked. So he got back up and, like, put on a t-shirt. He was in his underwear and his t-shirt. He's so cute. And then I said, he goes, so when do you think that we might get naked?
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, probably 5 dates.
In 5 dates.
And he was like,
oh, my God.
You know what he said? Huh? Can I see you tomorrow? I said, no. No, you cannot.
I love it. That's cute.
So, and then I shaved my head last night, y'all. I was bored at home, and so I shaved my head, and I sent him a picture, and I said, I shaved my head because I thought you would think I'm... I shaved my head because I thought you'd think it is sexier. Look what he said to me.
Oh, that's cute.
He said, I think you are sexy regardless.
Come on, granny love. I live.
Yup.
So, I love it.
And he is my age.
And it's about time.
Yep, he's actually a little bit older than me.
That's for real.
I am like...
Wait, time out. He does not look older than you.
No, he does not. We look the same age.
You do not look the same
age. Yes, we do.
Okay, sure. Whatever. No, they don't, you guys.
How about this? He has 3 grown kids that he adopted. Like,
oh,
you know, when
he
was with a partner for a long time, and they have 3 grown children, and he's a grandfather.
Wow.
Of, like, a baby. Like, the grandchild, his, you know, the children were adopted. I don't know how old they were when they were adopted or whatever. But, so he has, like, a little baby grandchild.
That's incredible.
I could be a grandmother, y'all.
No, bitch. Well, I mean, you'd be a step-grandmother. I guess so.
Well, all the hoes that I went to school with are already grandmothers. Then again, they were also grandmothers when we were, like, 35. Right. So, okay, because they got some fast-ass children, and they were, like,
fucking...
I'm not
even 35 yet.
And they were whores. Oh. So, but anyway, so we are going to go out again. It's, like, it looks that way. And we'll see. Also, P.S., side note, one of the people who came to see me in my wrestling event, I hit up also on Tinder, and I was like, he likes wrestling, and he came to the wrestling event. And he asked me out, too.
Oh. And what'd you say?
Well, we haven't gone out yet, but we're going to go for coffee.
Oh.
Look at this. I am suddenly polyamorous, bitch.
That does not mean you're polyamorous, you dumb ass. You
Whatever.
Are a mess.
Whatever.
I'm so over you. I cannot. Good for you. Look at Stella getting her groove back,
okay.
Bitch.
Stella had a groove for a while. It was called a rut, bitch. It's like, this groove. So, oh, speaking of which, Pearl, remember we had on last episode Angelica Ross from, who's going to be on the upcoming series Pose. It's the new Ryan Murphy, mostly trans series. We didn't know that when we had her on.
Right.
You've heard about this new series from Ryan Murphy, right?
Right. And she was just in the short film.
Yes, currently it's called Miss Connections.
That's what it
She's also on the TV show Claws, which will be back for its second season.
Yes,
soon.
Yes.
But she was just announced that beginning next year she'll be on this new Ryan Murphy, who is the creator of American Horror Story. He's got this.
She's
new...
doing great things.
Yeah, she's like bitch is working her ass off. Yeah, is what she's doing. So Pearl and I had she'd agreed because she hadn't been present for that interview to make sure she listens so she could comment on it. What were your thoughts on the interview?
I was telling Poyo before we went live that I understand the interest of in having me in on that interview, but I think that it was a more important conversation that you and her had versus the conversations me and her would have had, because me and her would have had conversations that it would have been 2 black trans women having conversations with each other. But I think what a lot of our listeners anyway. Anyway, because I know we have listeners from all over the place, but I'm assuming most of them are predominantly gay men from somewhere, you know? Because
maybe, at least I would assume, I'm guessing probably mostly gay men, yeah.
And I think they would need to hear a conversation between her and a gay man before they would hear a conversation between her and another trans woman to... kind of...
It becomes more... very specific if it's between two people who relate like that.
Yeah. And then it just turns into the audience listening to a conversation from the outside as opposed to being a part of that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that, you know, when I was listening... I've listened to it back several times because I'm getting
ready... It's a great interview.
...to write it up also for Huffington Post as well.
Honestly, I mean, I know she's not, like, the same level or whatever as Kelly Clarkson, but I think it's such a great and important interview, especially for our own community.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked... one of the things that will become one of the focal points when I do write it for Huffington Post is that, basically, in that conversation, and I really encourage you guys to go back to episode 90 and listen to it if you haven't.
Right.
Because... first and foremost, one of the things I admired about her is she had no problem, like, just being like, nope, just stop. Right. Like, listen to what you're saying.
And, right.
And a lot of people might not want to do that with an interviewer. And secondly, I'm really, in listening back to it, I was grateful that I'm in a place, probably after, like, almost 2 years of doing this show with you, where I can be like, okay, like, I'm listening to what you're saying. I'm going to repeat back what I'm hearing you say. Is this what you're saying? No, let's clarify, whatever. But right. One of the things that she said is, when I brought up, like, I think a lot of people want to be allies, or they want to understand and they want to be supportive, but there is a sense, an overwhelming sense, that even if you're trying to be supportive, you're going to say the wrong thing and totally upset somebody or hurt somebody's feelings. Mm-hmm. And I love the key fact that she says what it really comes down to is relationship. Do you have a relationship?
To be asking these kind of questions.
Right. To talk to the individual a certain way, to ask certain questions, to, you know. And that's why I've always felt that our interaction here is important, because you and I do have that kind of relationship where I can be like, so. And then the listeners voyeuristically get to kind of be educated through the process.
Right.
So, and as I related to her, there have been times where people come up to me and say shit out of the side of their neck that I'm just like, oh, honey, like, you fucking do not know.
Right.
You tried it. You do not know me that way. I don't know who the fuck you are.
Right.
And it's not even that personal. It's just about the fact that it ain't none of your business.
Right. Who,
like,
are you?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's like, it's not like I'm keeping a secret or trying to hide some shit. It's like, but who the fuck are you to be asking me? Like, why is it anything to you?
Right.
And, I think that that is really, and as I said to her, I think that's such a valuable tool. Like, when you're questioning whether or not, like, something is going to be offensive or overstepping a boundary, you just have to ask, like, what is my relationship to the person? And that's why, for example, like, you see it across the board. It's not just in relation to trans people. Like, excuse me, one time Shigella and I were at dinner with this guy, and really nice kid, like, whatever. We didn't really know him. Well, he sees the way that she and I are going at each other after, like, a decade plus of being BFFs and being, like, all up in each other's business. And then the next time I interacted with this particular kid, he came at me the same way as Shigella would. I clocked him so hard, read his beads in front of everyone.
Right.
And, like, just about had him, like, on the verge of tears. It was like... And then ultimately I stepped back and I, like, later reached out to him and was like, look, you know, this isn't because you said anything particularly wrong. It's just, you do not have I don't even know you. Like, I went to dinner with you and I would like to get to know you better, but you do not have that relationship with me.
Right.
Like, you can't say the things to me that my best friend can say to me, or my sister, or my, anybody. Like, if you don't know somebody. And I think that that's a really valuable tool that she gave us. Like, so if you're out there and you want to engage in a conversation, like, with somebody about something,
think if your relationship is that close for you to know that much about that individual's privacy.
Yeah. You know? I mean, is this something that you would ask a perfect stranger?
Right.
Really? I mean, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of, like, I don't just, like, walk up behind somebody at Safeway and be like, excuse me, ma'am, with the asparagus. Do you take it up the ass? I'm just right. curious, you know, like, right. you know, like,
what's your favorite position?
Yeah, like, you don't get up in people's business
do you
like
douche?
That.
Right. Yeah, like it's just not.
You just have to, like, you have to consider that, like, these are things that are people's real lives and their personal matters, and, like, do you have the relationship that allows yeah. for that?
And it's a trip because, I mean, you would think that a lot of this is common sense, but this is something that happens every day.
Yes.
Every day.
Well, that's why there's that saying that uncommon sense is so uncommon.
Right.
It should be called uncommon sense.
Right.
Because, bitch, some people do not... I mean, you see it all the time. Like, do you not have the sense that God gave a grapefruit, bitch? Because you, like, are dumb as a brick. You know, like, what right. is happening here?
And I think at this point, when it happens to me, like, I'm almost more embarrassed for the individual than I am them asking me or saying whatever it is that they're saying. And I don't, it's just people, you know, people.
Yeah. And God bless their little hearts. That's all I can say about yeah. that. We were, it reminds me of when I was on that date, when we were at Aunt Charlie's, we were sitting and there was people at the bar, like 2 feet from us or whatever. And there's this very intoxicated woman who apparently probably is like a bar fly at Aunt Charlie's. You know, uh-huh. she's probably there all the time because people seem to know her quite well. But there was a man sitting with his back to us, and he had braids that came, or like, well, dreads that came all the way down literally to his ass.
Uh-huh.
Like, so really long. Well, next thing you know, drunk homegirl is like standing up. Of course, she's white, y'all. She's standing up and she's like trying to touch on his hair.
No!
And like, and this other person came in, like another person of color was like, so-and-so, you don't touch a black person's hair. Like,
right.
you either, if you don't know them or you don't have permission, you don't touch a black person's hair. P.S.
You don't touch anybody's hair.
It doesn't like, you don't get up in people's hair. Like,
right.
I mean, black people, drag queens, bitch, I cannot tell you the number of times drag queens are like, some women like, oh, I love her. Bitch, stop, bitch. It's like,
right.
it's, you know. But anyway, she was like, oh, I was just, she was not hearing it. But the guy was like, I'm just trying to help you. Like,
right.
I'm telling you, like, he maybe doesn't mind it, or, and maybe this is a place where you can do that, but you just generally do not go up and randomly start touching people's hair. Like, that's
right.
not okay.
It's rude.
It is rude. And, like, and especially, like, black folks have a special thing about their hair.
Right.
Like black folks have a real, like, thing about, like, don't fuck with my hair. Like, right. I don't exactly understand what it is, but black folks really don't like it, especially. Especially when you're white and you're, like, because it's...
Yeah.
Because it usually comes with something like, oh, I just, like, your right. hair is so this or that.
Right.
Or, like, I don't know what the fuck it is. It usually comes with, like, an expression of how surprised they are that your hair is this or that or
right.
whatever. It's foolishness is what it is, y'all.
Black hair has history, y'all.
And
before you even go around trying to touch black people's hair, you should know the history behind black hair.
I mean, it's
But
just,
even then, it's still not okay.
Yeah, unless somebody, generally speaking, use this as a rule of thumb. Don't touch people unless, like...
Period.
Yeah, just don't do people. It.
Yeah.
Unless they've given you, like, some kind of permission. Expressed, vocalized permission.
Right.
Like...
Hands to yourself.
Yeah, just don't do it, folks. Like, I mean, I don't like people to, like, invade my personal space anyway. Like...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even have hair. Except on my back.
Girl, I can't tell you. Like, that would really... Like, I would hate. Especially my hair, bitch. No.
I mean...
Don't try it.
Yeah, it's... whatever. It was so funny to me because I was thinking, like, you know, again, it's about, do you have a relationship with this person?
To be up in her hair like this.
Yeah, don't just go up and touch people's fucking hair. What is that right. about?
Well, that's great. It was a great interview. I'm looking forward to this one, too.
Yes, on this episode, we will have Michelle Sam, who is the... She was the writer of this short film that stars Angelica Ross. It is called Missed Connections. Mm-hmm. Just look it up, you guys. And Michelle Sam was tells me about the history behind this and why it was so important for her to write. So, in fact, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we will come back to that Michelle Sam interview.
Okay.
And we'll be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this.
Party Foul Radio is brought to you in conjunction with our sponsors, Daddy's Barbershop, located at 4102 19th Street in the Castro District of San Francisco. Daddy's Barbershop was voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Visit Arlen, Jesse, and the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop to get your hair done today. Be sure to tell them that Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl sent you.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson. I'm hanging out with Party Foul Radio.
Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants are a sponsor of Party Foul Radio. For all of your personal lubrication needs, from silicone and water-based lubricants to anal creams, masturbation creams, and even male enhancement products, visit a fine retailer near you and check out Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants and other products.
Hello?
Michelle?
Yeah, hello?
I'm a little bit late because I was on the phone with Angelica. So,
Awesome, yes.
Angelica is really delightful and so brilliant.
She is. She's really amazing. It's been a great experience working with her.
The unfortunate downside to her brilliance and how well-spoken she is and how thoughtful she is that we didn't extensively discuss the short film, Misconnections, but I think that people knowing that the lead character is played by a woman who has got such tremendous depth is really going to inspire them to want to find out more about the product. So it's
good. Yay. That's great. I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, I watched Miss Connections this morning, and at the end, I noticed that it said that it was inspired by the word Craigslist and then another story, and I was wondering if you could tell me about that.
Yes, definitely. The Moth Storytelling producer, Gary Buckler, and his kind of like co-worker partner, Martin Lamonti, created this series called Shoot 'Em Up, an Evolution of a Story. And they take story, they take writers, they take directors, they take storytellers. And each month they give us a topic on what we should do. And for that particular topic, mine was Craigslist. They gave it in terms of cycles. Everyone got the word Craigslist. Everyone came up with a different story in relation to Craigslist. So there's the storytellers, they got, you know, the Craigslist thing. The writers, they got the Craigslist thing. And then the directors, they got the Craigslist thing. So that's why I mentioned that inspired by the word Craigslist. And, you know, just give credit to the other people in the cycle who also got, you know, the word Craigslist because it was part of the incubation program.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was one of those things, it was slipped in so fast I had to rewind it and pause it and try to see what it was saying. So it's an interesting backstory about how it came about.
Yeah. It's really cool because I only had a month to do it. That was part of the challenge that they issued to us with the word Craigslist. I was like, okay, Misconnections. And then on the day that I wrote the screenplay, Black transgender woman was killed in New Orleans. And as a social justice activist, we don't say transgender woman's names enough, especially Black transgender woman's names. Yeah, I wrote it, and I called up and emailed about 300 LGBT centers, nonprofits, castor offices, just really... just anyone who knew anyone who'd be interested in being part of the project. Next day, Angelica's manager called, and they loved the script, and Angelica loved the script, and worked together, and they knew the quick turnaround, and it was really amazing that we were able to make it work, because she's filming for another project, and she flew in, we did it, and had a lot of fun in the process.
It was very interesting to me in some capacity, because the fact that she is trans is, you know, alluded to early on, but we're about halfway through the project or the film before it's actually revealed and discussed. And I was wondering about the thought process behind that of sort of not putting that out there from the beginning.
Yes, I believe in intersectionality because, you know, in the story, there's a conflict that she's working a tech job when she really wants to be an artist. It's a short film. So you can only include so much story, but her identity is more than just a Black transgender woman. You know, she is a woman that loves Settlers of Catan. She is a woman who, you know, likes Game of Thrones. She's a woman that likes to draw. You know, she is a woman that's millennial, that, you know, is grinding on her grind, but, you know, also wants to make some changes in the direction of her career. So that's why I put it a little bit later, because at the end of the day, it's about the full identity of who she is as a person.
My interpretation of it in part was that it also coincides with the revelation that she has to make to her eventual love interest, because mm-hmm. he has discovered, you know, so many elements about her during their short meeting in the desert at Burning Man mm-hmm. that he falls in love with. And the part that he doesn't know about her is the part that ultimately the rest of the world perhaps is identifying her as most wholly.
Yeah. I mean, Burning Man, it's a very experimental place. It's a very artistic place. And you meet a lot of strangers and you just have adventures with them. You talk to them. A lot of people have kind of aliases and like costumes and names, because Burning Man is kind of like this world where you can just be, you know, at least that's what they aim to be. You go back to the real world and you realize, oh, shit, you know, the real world has a lot of microaggressions. You know, that's particularly why I added that bathroom scene, because, you know, you have people who, you know, claim to be allies, but then, you know, they, you know, stop at microaggressive behavior, you know, especially white women who are calling themselves allies. So I wanted to kind of show that with that particular bathroom scene. And then...
it was so awkward.
Yeah, yeah. Angelica and I were talking about it as she read it. She's like, oh my goodness, like, yes, like, that's the shit that happens. And, you know, I'm a cisgender woman, but, you know, sometimes I get microaggressive behavior with, you know, white women who are trying to touch my hair without even asking, who are, you know, just being like, you're so brave, like, your brother was shot, you know, and I don't know how you deal with it. I'm just like, but my brother wasn't shot. I know other people that have been, but, and they make assumptions, you know, that they know.
Your brother was shot.
Yeah. Right? You know, this is because I used to write it for a few years, and it's just like they make assumptions about your identity. They mean well and they're allies, but at the same time, they're so ignorant and they don't make the effort to meet you halfway in terms of education. And not everyone is like that. Some of them, you know, do make the effort and are, you know, good allies. But then, you know, you have women like that particular character in the bathroom who, you know, is like patriarchy, like, oh, we're all in this together. And she just like literally started a bunch of like, you know, microaggressive behavior towards the lead. But back to the question, how it became about her disclosing that she's a transgender woman to the guy. Noticed that there were stories in the news, especially the one that, you know, triggered me writing the story about how it happened on a date. They disclosed it, or the guy felt that they didn't know, whatever, and then, unfortunately, they would murder the woman. And I wanted to show a story where, especially since a lot of these cases of black men who were murdering the black transgender woman, where two people who, you know, got to know each other and have a deep conversation and kind of felt like outsiders in their own world, you know, back home, made a connection, and this connection, for lack of a better word, you know, you see kind of the struggles that they're going with their lives and their career, you kind of see their friends, you know, slices of their life, and then you realize, like, oh, this could become a problem, because you've just seen so many narratives that end in tragedy and sadness and devastation. Also, there's this myth, transgender women don't disclose, or transgender women tricks people, which is a horrible, horrible stereotype that is simply just not true, you know, in most cases. So kind of exploring the forethought of a transgender woman disclosing, you know, and wanting to disclose, and making sure, like, okay, I got my friends, you know, because it's dangerous in daytime in a public diner. I made sure to mention that, really honing up on his expression and his ultimate understanding, you know, to show that, oh, there are people that are cool, that you get it, and even though it will be his first experience, he's willing to see. And so is she.
Angelica and I talked about a little bit about how so much as relates to people's perception of the trans community
relates to passability. And if it weren't explicitly detailed in the script, in the story, I think it would be very easy for a woman like Angelica to completely fly under the radar, if you will. You know, people would not be able to recognize that she's trans. And I think that that plays into the story just in the degree that this individual would never have had any reason to suspect. And I also love the fact that I probably shouldn't give away the common thing that they both express to each other, that is how they identify one another, their common fear. But, you know, her fear plays to that fact that she will never, you know, the people, once they know who she really is, may not accept that. Mm-hmm. And I think that that, yeah. I honestly think that that is such a universal theme. It goes well beyond trans relationships or the fears that people within the LGBTQ community have. I think it's a human fear that if you really knew me, that you would reject me. It plays to the idea that at some basic level, we are unlovable and that we will be rejected.
Yeah, it's a human experience. It's the fear that both of them had. And at the desert, you know, they had great times and they had great conversations about not feeling like they can be loved for who they are, which I think is a universal, as you mentioned, experience and emotion.
After having watched this, I would really love to see, I don't think it would be considered a sequel. I think it would be considered just a shift of perspective. I would love to see the relationship dynamics explained through the eyes of the male love interest, because of the fact that we know where the relationship ends up by the end of this short film, but it would be very interesting to see the learning curve and the learning experience between the two of them that takes them to that point.
Yeah. People have mentioned that they would love to see a sequel afterwards, as well as, like, just more. I mean, and this was my first film, to be honest. So it's been very exciting for it to come to fruition like this, and also to go through the festival circuit. And in terms of that particular character, I have been the partner of transgender men. And as I was writing it, you know, there's this sense of, okay, so do you write it from that perspective, or do you write it from the transgender woman's experience? And, like, luckily, took it to GLAAD, Transgender Media Program, and they were of great help and support, because at the end of the day, when you write stories, it's not always about you, you know? This story is not about me. I wanted it specifically to be about a transgender woman and her experiences in life. But I think it's very, very interesting that you mentioned that you would like to kind of see from the perspective of the guy. It's pretty cool. That's the first time that, you know, I've heard that feedback. You know, more people were more interested in just seeing how they were as a couple afterwards, as well as more about her.
Right. And I am certain that there are people who would possibly interpret my response as maybe typical, like, of course you want to hear more about the guy or whatever. And what I'm saying is not specifically that. I'm not devaluing the story of the female transgender female lead. What I'm saying is that I think that if a short film like this could accurately reflect some of the growing pains of a couple who are, one is the female transgender individual and the other is a man who is open to experiencing this world for the first time, what are the growing pains that they experience? What are the educational speed bumps that they have to overcome? What is the learning curve? Because in part, I think that the exposure of all sides of a story like this can be beneficial. We've seen some of the obstacles that she has come to. What are the other sides? Because for people who are open to the possibility, I think that whether it's the societal pressure that, oh, I don't want, you know, I read in Angelica's personal story that she called off, for example, her own engagement at one point because he didn't want anybody to know that she had transitioned. And what are some of the things that people who are open to that kind of a relationship going to possibly experience and what to, you know, maybe provide a little bit of a guideline. Like, this is how it happened. And this is maybe a more empathetic approach to this situation, or these are, I think I made myself clear on this. I just feel like I'm struggling to express it.
No, you're not struggling. I'm listening, and I 100% agree with you, because, you know, when I did date, my partner, it was a learning curve for me, but I was totally open to it. But it's so cool that you mentioned that, you know, I could mention that perspective, because, you know, there's this sense of allyship where it's, it's not about you, focus on, the people that are, disenfranchised. Especially if it's expanded into a TV show, there'd be enough space and time to be able to include, that other story of, someone who's open but also needs to learn, kind of how to be in a relationship that has, all the same elements, but also, you deal with, different microaggressions and outright transphobia and homophobia by association, as well as different body boundary issues.
Yeah, and I think that my thought on it is that in a situation like this, both sides of the story ultimately are equally beneficial, because of the fact that I think that there are many people who probably would have a significant fear about entering into a relationship with a trans person, because what does that mean about me? Like, what would that mean? What would that say about me? Would that mean that I'm gay? Would that mean that how will people perceive that? And I think that addressing some of those things is important, because as much as people who are trans are not represented in film or products like projects like yours, the other side of the story is perhaps even less explored at this point in time.
I agree. Yeah. It would be cool to have a sequel in relation to how they're growing pains as a couple. Also, I'm also happy that I kind of alluded to that in terms of the dual protagonist story. And you gave me a great idea in terms of what could be the follow-up project. Because usually when you do a short film, sometimes you do a feature, but with this particular one, what happens next? And that's, something I'm exploring as well.
The great part about it is that with your story, it could explore that period of time between when they meet up at the diner and where we ultimately find out they end up. That clearly would not have happened overnight. So there's a whole growing experience there. And that honestly is also a universal story, because it doesn't matter what the specific growing pains of your relationship look like. Every relationship has growing pains. And, in this situation, it's a person who's exploring the possibility of what it means to be in love with and romantically involved with a trans individual. Some people, it's really mundane. It's like, I hate the fact that you throw your socks on the floor. You throw your socks on the floor every day. You know what I mean? It's like, but the specifics of that are really how people deal with conflict or misunderstandings is such a universal subject matter.
It is. And my experience was more on the mundane side, why do you leave the toilet up so much? Put it down, spread germs, so just exploring the relationship, because you're right, we haven't seen that yet. Transparent has touched on it, but you haven't seen a younger couple who, where they're both open and they're both, having good intentions, but, exploring the growing pains as well as society's stereotypes of them, as well as kind of how their family reacts as well to it.
Right. I was very interested. The short film alludes to the female character's family dynamics and the issues that are at play there. And I thought overall there were so many unanswered questions by your film. So it certainly opens up many doors to explore each of those stories in a capacity that makes you feel comfortable.
Yeah, I'm very excited. When we were editing it, we were 15 minutes. We have to hit 15 minutes or less, because it's no longer a short film if it's beyond that. It's semi-short film, medium short film, and we knew for scheduling, if it was anything over 15 minutes, it would not have gotten seen. So we aimed for that 15-minute storyline, but there's definitely a lot of threads that we left open because we wanted to show not a complete story, but strains of a story, the possibility, the potential, the dropping you into these people's lives. And then, you know, they find each other and, you know, the possibility of more.
Absolutely. And the film has been picked up by a series of film festivals. And I was wondering what your thoughts are on rolling this out for a broad audience at these festivals around the world.
It's been an amazing experience. Last week, 2 weeks ago, I went to Sweden at the Queer Cinema LGBT International Film Festival. And you know, they had selected Miss Connections and they hosted me. And it was so interesting to see how foreign audience reacted to Miss Connections. You know, they laughed at different parts. They, you know, took in the film at different parts. And they also had different questions because there was some, you know, American jargon. They couldn't get that, but they didn't quite know. And also just kind of like their culture is very different from America. So, you know, it was interesting to kind of see how it landed with them. But also they took something, you know, different from it. So that has been a very different experience. And I'm excited to see, you know, as more festivals roll in, how you know, different people from different areas absorb the film and its themes and its content.
Well, that is the beautiful thing about art, really. You create your vision of this film, and then how people receive it is so individual that every person can watch the same product and come away with something different. I mean, obviously there'll be universal threads that people that hit a heartstring with everybody, perhaps, but specifics become very different based on who your audiences are.
Yeah, and that's been the most exciting because when we first premiered it at the Shoot 'Em Up NPR show, it was an older audience, and they were like kind of like thoughtful, contemplative, not a lot of laughs. You know, while when we premiered it at Outfest, you know, we got applause, some cheers, like just like outright people, you know, screaming and hollering at some of the jokes. So it's interesting to kind of see how that audience reacted to it versus another audience across the age demographic. Yeah, isn't that like it's cool just how you can literally what you said put something out there and then people just take what it is out of it. You know, my mother is conservative and you know I showed it to her and she was like, "Whoa! Like this is really cool. I really like it." And I'm just like, "Really?" you know, because she is still you know growing as a person, but she's not. You know, for example, you know she. You know, doesn't know the jargon of, you know, like, LGBT. She knows them separately, but she's like, LGBTG, like, L something something, like, you know, so she, you know, is trying and educating herself, especially because, you know, I'm bisexual, you know, and she generally wants to learn, but, you know, for a long time, she was homophobic. So for her to see this and be like, this is a beautiful story, I really liked it, you know, and show it to her other conservative friends who also were like, yo, we really like it. And then they want to show it to their other, you know, conservative friends. And, you know, and they were able to find, like, a common thread of relatability with it despite their views. And I found that to be very, very interesting because I did not expect that.
You answered one of the questions I was going to ask you because I'm always curious about sexuality labels that people apply to themselves or adopt for themselves. And as a woman who has been in a relationship with a trans man, many would consider themselves straight because they're in a relationship with a man, but you identify as bisexual.
Yeah, or pansexual, technically, if you want to deeper into it. You know, I have been with women, I have been with men, gay or transgender men. For me, and this may come off as very pretentious, so I apologize, you know, it's really about the person at the end of the day, you know, relating to the person and just, I don't know, kind of just the chemistry. You know, when I see it, when I know it, you know, when I experience it, I just know. And I've had that experience with women, and I've had that experience with men, and I've had that experience with transgender men. So in terms of identity, I say I'm bisexual because gender is sometimes, you know, very binary, but we can expand it out to pansexual because, you know, oftentimes people are like, well, cisgender men, transgender men, they're different, but at the same time, they're still men.
Yeah, I sometimes feel personally, what is the term I'm looking for here? I feel under-enlightened, perhaps, or feel that I'm not as advanced as I, or evolved as I could be sexually, because I can form strong relationships with all people, but for me, sexuality, the sexuality element of it is very related to genitalia. And I feel like I'm tense saying that because I'm sure that there will be some kind of backlash. But I think that for me, emotionally, I can attach strongly to many people. But sexually, when it comes to that realm, then I think it becomes something specific. I feel like that goes in the face of what many would like to have people think about sexuality. And I'm not saying that is right or wrong. I'm saying that is for me.
Yeah, that's your experience. And that is fine. You know, we're all growing and learning. And also we've been socialized for a very long time to, you know, to believe in, you know, the binary terms and how things should be, quote-unquote, you know, according to, you know, society's rules. You know, so we're all, like, I think we're at a time where, you know, we're now given permission by the sheer number of people who have been so brave to come out to show what life could be through the arts, the media, and just by living by example of, oh, if you like, you know, people beyond, you know, the standard, you know, binary terms, that's okay. And also, if you don't, that's also okay. You know, at the end of the day, we are who we are, we like what we like, and, you know, as long as there's no hate being spread around, empathy, and, as you mentioned, deep emotional connections are being made, the sexuality part is strictly, you know, just what you like and what you don't like.
You and I might agree on that, but I have received messaging from people within our own community that say that preferences or things that, you know, are specifically that turn one individual on, if they're exclusionary in some way, then that's not acceptable. And I personally really try to personally live by the idea that whatever makes you happy or sexually aroused or whatever, then I'm okay with it. I don't have to participate in it. And the same for me, like what turns me on sexually may not turn other people on sexually, or what I don't place a value on a person based on whether or not I'm personally, individually, sexually attracted to them.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it should be in terms of, like, unfortunately there is, in a world where there are people who do place the value of the person, whether they are sexually attracted to them or not. You know, not everyone is like you, you know, or us, where, you know, we accept everyone for who they are, but are explore, you know, and like a certain thing. But there are some people who discriminate, you know, unfortunately, or who are very prejudiced, or who, you know, think a group is lower than the other, you know, and they, like, link it to their sexual preferences, which is something that, you know, I think a lot of people have experienced, especially if they're intersectional or they have, like, differing identities that they have to, you know, experience daily, you know, the racism, the sexism, the discrimination, all the isms. And you have, you know, people who unfortunately are like, oh, no, you know, I don't like transgender women. Oh, I don't like black women. Oh, I don't like And I think your listeners, maybe, are looking at it from that particular perspective, that there are people that are, who are dicks. There are people who are dicks in the world, but, just basically talking from with you, you're not one, because you are open. You seem to be open, and you have good intentions, and you generally do want the best for everyone, as well as, aim to, like everyone, but you can't help what you like. And it's not because you view a group or, a certain segment of people as less than. It's just kind of how you are.
Right. Well, I would say that, honestly, the groups of people that I place in my life at the highest value, actually, I'm not sexually attracted to at all. I mean, most of my friends, I'm not attracted to my friends sexually. People who have the greatest value in my life are not people with whom I'm trying to forge a sexual relationship at all. And I value them based on who they are as individuals and what they contribute to my life in terms of their viewpoints and their perspectives and the value of their support and the things that don't link up to sexuality at all. Ideally, would I find a sexual partner or life partner or spouse that I feel all of those deep emotional connections to on a platonic level, but I'm also sexually attracted to? Yes, that is the perfect storm, honey. That's the one where I lose my mind.
That's the goal, right? Like, yeah, that's the goal, right? Like,
right. But, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, the best friend that I can't keep my hands off of. Hello. That is the goal.
That's the goal, right?
But, at the same time, I think that we're in a place in community and society wherein people, I think, have experienced so much rejection in other areas of their life that the feeling of lack of acceptance, and I, by the way, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination trying to suggest, even at the most minimal level, that racism, sexism, etc., don't exist on a sexual level, because I'm fully aware of that, and you can take it down to no fats, femmes, or Asians. That's you see it all the time, you see it pop up. But there are other situations where, I know what I'm attracted to, and I don't have to reduce it to something so crass as to tell somebody in advance. No thank you is enough. They don't need to have an explanation of why that I'm not interested. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be hurtful in that. I'm just not interested. So, anyway, I'm sorry, Michelle. I took this on some total tangent.
I'm looking at it. It's a conversation, and it's cool that, we're comfortable enough to discuss our experiences with sexuality, because I think at the end of the day, we both, even though, we have differing sexualities and, understandings of it, we both, are, the people that we value the most in our lives are people that we may or may not be attracted to. And at the end of the day, the goal is to treat everyone with respect and, be a good person. And be open and foster that safe space for them, as well as, empower them and sit the fuck down sometimes when, you need to, and, be in LA and learn and grow. And, also, we agree that at the end of the day, you should want to marry your best friend you can keep your hands off of.
Absolutely.
If you believe in marriage, yeah.
One of the reasons, for example, going back to the idea that I had where I would love to see the growing process for this male lead is because I think that in various ways, your short film points out how difficult the reality can be to be an ally that is successful in being an ally. I read an article not that long ago, I believe it was on HuffPost Queer Voices, that said, this is what you need to do if you want to be a real ally. I think that people want to be an ally. I think at the basic level, they want to be an ally. They want to feel that they're supportive of people around them. But there are certain traps that people fall into, like that woman, who, God love her, the woman in your bathroom scene in your film, obviously thinks that she is talking the talk and walking the walk and doing what's right. And then, you know, when people who've experienced that kind of situation view it, they're like, oh, Jesus, you did everything wrong while totally trying to do everything right.
Exactly, yes. Yes, yeah, there are people out there. And it's interesting because, you know, I have a bunch of friends who, we're all women of color, and so we all have our own microaggressions that we face, but our sexualities are all different. And we were talking the other day, a few weeks ago, about how some of them felt at a disadvantage because they didn't know the jargon. Yeah, and they've been educating themselves by, like, you know, looking it up on the internet, but they didn't know the jargon of, like, pansexual, cisgender, you know, and all these words that describe, you know, sexuality as well as sociological words when it comes to race and ethnic relations, as well as, you know, women's studies buzzwords. So they felt at a disadvantage, you know, because they were like, well, you know, I experienced oppression and I want to be a good ally to other people, but at the same time, I feel like if I even, like, show my support, I'll put my foot in my mouth.
Absolutely.
And I thought that was very interesting that they said that because, like, I was lucky enough to come from a background where my dad was a professor and my cousin, you know, who it was very, you know, pro-black, you know, gave me James Baldwin and Malcolm X when I was 9 or 10. And then subsequently, you know, I went on to study at the university, you know, sociology as well as theater. You know, so I was able to just grow up with a working knowledge of the jargon, even as it shifted, you know, as you got into post-feminism and third wave, you know, I was able to kind of just always just know them. But to, you know, have someone who is also, you know, with me, you know, marching, with me organizing, with me creating, you know, art, who also has that urge, but also does not know, I thought, know the words and has a fear of being shunned or, you know, being taken out of context and, like, having kind of that fear while they're, you know, helping and, you know, going about their own causes. I thought that was a very interesting discussion that we had and an interesting perspective that I think that a lot of people are facing. You know, as the world is changing and as our sexualities and how we identify is expanding and words that, you know, previously were not in the lexicon or were not as widely known in the mainstream, you know, are being adapted, how do you learn about it? And if you are learning about it, but you still are, like, in the process of learning and you know, say something, you know, that can be considered wrong, how do we react? And how should we feel? And, you know, are we, you know, supposed to, you know, what do we do? And I thought it was just a very good debate that we all had, you know, about that.
And I absolutely would agree with that because I think that one of the things that even within the community, that even within the LGBTQ community, that I sometimes feel is that something I say is going to be taken completely opposite of how it's intended by some party, and then I'm going to be thrown into some kind of seething cauldron of public debate that does not take into consideration my actual actions, only like some specific set of words or some tweet or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And
I feel the same way too. And I like have a good working knowledge of words and I feel the same way too, you know, in terms of just in general, because, you know, words are so, especially nowadays with social media and people like some people are, you know, are actually engaged and some people have professionals. And, you know, write their statements, and it's like, okay, so what if I, like, say the wrong thing, or what if it's extreme, and it's like, what can I do, especially, like, you know, especially backtrack, you know, and say, that's not what I meant, and then people are like, but then you should have just said that, and I was like, well, but,
right.
You know.
Right, I mean, yeah. A perfect example of how something that happened recently in my life could have been perceived as being completely out of context is we know about the hashtag Me Too, right? Like that's a big thing on social media right now. And as all of this was circulating, I had posted a story of my own I think it was January 1st, 2015. So we're talking 2.5 years ago. And I reshared it on social media in light of all of this thing to say that, and I just said that so often men are saying that trying to discredit claims from women that they've been either a victim of or experienced sexual violence, sexual aggression, sexual harassment. And I said, this is not simply a woman's issue. And, you know, if like you need to remember that it's not just women that are saying these things. And therefore, if you have the mindset to dismiss what a woman says because it's a woman, like, this isn't simply the case. Like, this happens to people across the spectrum. And it's a problem that's, you know, only now being heard about from women. Well, some people I received feedback saying that, oh, the focus is supposed to be on women and how, just like men, to co-opt a woman's movement and make it about themselves. And I was like, that wasn't my intention. So I had to, like, I made a series of tweets, more tweets, apologizing for possibly derailing the conversation than I made about the post itself. And I was like, you know, that wasn't my intent. And my intent was to show some kind of, like, allyship or kinship or understanding, saying, like, I hear you because this kind of thing has happened to me as well. And, you know, I understand the kind of the hesitation, the pain, the shame on a personal level, but I'm hearing you. And, you know, it was just like, you know, that wasn't my intention, ladies. Like, you know, women, I did not do that to say that, you know, oh, well, your experience was less than, you know, because I, whatever. No. And I think that a lot of people have that kind of fear. They don't want to even speak up because they don't want to become embroiled in something that can become greater than what their intention was even to begin with.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Me Too, because I think it is focused on women, you know, because women have been talking about this for a long time, but they haven't been believed.
Absolutely.
Or to like go, you know, with the punches, or they were silenced. And, you know, and now seeing these stories have empowered women to, you know, who probably were too afraid to mention anything and to tell their stories, and also to, you know, show that, oh, it wasn't just me, there are other women, and to see the vast scope of women. Like, every woman I know has a Me Too story. And I was looking at it on my Facebook, and I'm not on social media a lot, but I was looking at my Facebook, and one of my friends texted me saying, hey, how come you haven't done a Me Too yet? And I'm like, well, one, I've had a lot of deadlines, and I'm also just not on social media like that. She encouraged me because she kind of knew my experiences. So, like, a couple of days ago, I did a Me Too. And, you know, I basically broke down, like, every microaggression that has happened towards me, as well as assault and rape and, you know, violence towards me. You know, and I mentioned, you know, like, thank you to those who were brave enough to, you know, speak out. Thank you to those who supported me during those times. Sending love to those who cannot speak and be silenced, because there's a sense of, if you don't say Me Too as well, that you are accepting the behavior when there are some people who are legitimately silenced and afraid. And until that time comes when they can talk about it with anyone, it doesn't even need to be online, with anyone really, you know, who is empathetic or can get them out of that situation if it's perpetual, you know, we need to be able to give support to them as well. And I also mentioned that, you know, there's a sense of shame of having, you know, these fears of, you know, double guessing what I'm going to wear, because I knew that, you know, guys would follow me, you know, if I wore something certain. You know, having that shame of, like, not being able to talk about, you know, my rape, or, you know, when I was 18, or, you know, being, you know, exposed, you know, when I was a kid, and then being silenced. Like, all these things that, you know, I talked about, you know, with someone, but, like, I wasn't on a public platform talking about it because I was talking about, you know, Black rights issue, or intersectional feminist issues, or artistic issues, and just having a sense of shame, like, you know, that I was even afraid, because, you know, Black girls are magic, and Black girls are strong, you know, but at times, sometimes I don't feel magic, and sometimes I don't feel strong, and I'm ashamed of that, you know, and I mentioned that in the post, and, you know, got a good response. Because it's like, you know, Black women are always told that we're so strong and we can handle everything, and that's like, you know, we transcend it almost. When at times, it is us too. And so I mentioned that in the post. And then it like started kind of this whole, like, you know, conversation from someone who's like, I wish that and said you supported, you know, all races, such as black women. And I'm just like, what? I literally did not say that. And, like, luckily, like, everyone who, you know, responded to the post, like, called out this person saying she literally did not say that. She literally said, you know, as a black woman, there are expectations of, you know, how you deal with stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, you are not the strongest or the most magical, and you're just vulnerable, you know, and the person, like, DM'd me and was, like, fighting other people who were, like, you know, calling them out and mentioning, like, they literally didn't read it, and, you know, luckily the person apologized, but they still missed the whole point, because at the end of it, they're like, I have a black daughter, too, so I'm not racist, you know, and I'm just like, okay, and they were masking under, like, you know, an allyship, you know, like, you know, they're being very patronized and saying, like, I'm sorry about your experiences, but, you know, and I'm just like, what? Like, and they literally projected kind of what they wanted to be onto it, and I think that's a problem, especially when it's up online, out for the world to see. Some people do not bother reading it or interpreting it in a way, and then also a lot of these people do not know you. Like, they're your friends, for example, in yours, who would have known exactly what you would have said and how your post is supposed to, you know, be taken, but then there are other people who do not know you as well, who are looking at it, and they come to their own conclusion of what it could be that you said. So,
right. In my situation, as I said, I had originally written this post about my experience 2.5 years ago, you know, and the reason I wrote that post is because I had experienced something. And now, of course, just like you've mentioned, anybody who's experienced any traumatic situation, whether it's a sexual assault or, you know, any kind of a violence, anything that has traumatized you, like the physical element of that leaves you after usually a fairly short period of time. The emotional trauma of it remains. And in my conversation with Angelica in a previous interview, she commented that, you know, many people act like a wounded child, but you're an adult and you need to take responsibility for your behavior. And that's something that I recognized through an incident that was, I wouldn't say completely harmless, but it was certainly not traumatic on the level that I experienced it, because I recognized that it touched a nerve of something that I had not either made public or made peace with on a larger level. And for me, the post originally was to put it out into the world, because my belief about shame, for example, is that you cannot feel shame is something that you feel so strongly is necessary to hide that you are fearful of it being discovered. Not unlike the fear that Angelica's character experiences when she's about to reveal her gender identity in Missed Connections. For me, this was something that I was, like, holding on to because it marked a part of who I am, and I'm sure it has affected my interactions with others going forward. And I just wanted to put it into the world. And I think that a huge part of the Me Too idea is not just to bring attention and light to what is happening to women. It's also for those women to take back, saying, like, yes, this happened, but it doesn't have to define who I am.
Who you are.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was for me what the experience was. And then I was like, okay, by sharing it, I'm like, oh shit, I've really stepped on a potential landmine here. Thankfully, the number of people who expressed appreciation for the story far outweighed the number of people who felt that it was detrimental in some way. And I was like, oh, good.
Yeah.
You know, luckily.
Yeah. Same here. Yeah. Yep.
So now, Michelle, how can people find you online? I saw that you're the Michelle Sam on Twitter.
Yes, as well as on Instagram. So, same handle on both. And then we also have a Missed Connections Facebook page.
Well, I appreciate you talking today. I appreciate that you've put out this fine piece of short film work that speaks to the LGBTQ experience, specifically the trans experience. And I think that, I mean, I really am of the variety of person that thinks that the more stories that are told, the more likely any individual story gets represented in media. So I think it's important for people to write about their own experiences, write about the experiences of others, and put those out into the world for people to gravitate towards and, you know, to feel that their story has finally been told in some capacity.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and that's dangerous. You know, you have to have as many stories as you can, you know, to help dispel, you know, that single story of stereotypes. So I'm very happy to that my work is, you know, helping to, you know, on a little level, even just on a minor level, help dispel the myth of the single story.
And if you're a listener out there, I'm not speaking for Michelle, but I am saying, quoting something that was said to me by Oscar winner Dustin Lance Black. If you feel that your story hasn't been told yet in film, media, or any other situation, what are you waiting for? Pick up your pen, sit at your typewriter, tell your damn story. Don't wait for somebody else to do it for you.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I did. You know, did acting and improv comedy. And I literally just picked up the pen and just started writing. And it's been so empowering and a great experience. You know, you never know what you can create. You don't have to wait years or to gain, like, a world-class experience or education. Although those are cool, I guess. But you can literally just do it yourself. Do it on your own.
I appreciate that. And, of course, one of the things I think that my suggestion, as a person who is also a writer, in addition to all the other things I do, like, one of the things that I find really helpful as a suggestion, and you kind of alluded to it as well with your experience with Misconnections, is when you're telling your story, I try not to think about who might read it, who might see it, whose hands it might end up in, because that can shift my ability to be honest in the story. I just write the story and then pray for the power and willingness and strength to put it out into the world and then just let it go. And where it lands, that's not up to me. That's not up to me.
And I think people respond well to that because, you know, when you're being honest, you're being vulnerable. And when you put it out there, that's an act of vulnerability as well. And then, you know, people recognize it and see it. And then they relate to it, you know?
Yes. I mean, I can always tell. I mean, how many times have we watched a film that felt just so contrived? Or read a story that you're like, this is contrived. Like, this doesn't feel authentic. Right. You know, and
yeah, where it's like, you know they had a checklist where they're just like, token, check, exotic location, check. You know, it's like, you know, they went through literally a checklist and you could tell, like, oh, okay, they're trying to hit some type of groove or demographic, and it almost seems like an advert, you know, when it's like supposed to be, you know, work of art.
Right. Oh, and it feels gratuitous, you know, it's like, you know. I mean, I'm so glad, honestly, like, we saw that as members of the LGBTQ community. We saw that for such a long time. I'm so glad that the sassy gay best friend is less prominent now. I mean, you know, there was a good 10-year period where we were like, look how much representation we've gotten. And then my response to that was always like, yes, we are the sassy gay best friend or whatever, but there's, like, more to that character. Could you maybe give them some humanity, please? I mean...
Right? I mean, rather always being the sidekick,
right? What the hell? Well, I mean, as a sassy gay man, like, you know, and as a drag personality, like, do I recognize that part of my role in life is to, like, prance into a chaotic and painful situation, say something lighthearted, and make everybody laugh? Yes, but I don't prance back off stage when that happens. Like, I show up, I lighten the mood maybe a little bit, and then we go on with, I'm a real person. I have other things going on besides my one-liners. Hello.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
Yes, I'm glad. Yeah.
I'm so glad we had a chance to talk. I wish you and Miss Connections and all of your cast and crew the best of luck as you hit the festival circuit. And you guys will get to come to San Francisco for Frameline.
That would be brilliant. Like, yeah, we're going to submit to San Francisco Frameline. I really like the city. Love Oakland. Oakland's my favorite. And I'd be very excited to see it and go there. And also, thank you so much for interviewing me and Angelica. It was a great interview, and I hope your listeners enjoyed it.
Well, thank you so much. And you guys, you can check out Misconnections, go to their Facebook, go to their social media. And I saw that there's even a website just dedicated to the film itself.
Yes, misconnectionslove.com.
So check it out, you guys. Thank you so much, Michelle, for joining us. It's been a great time, and best of luck to you.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye. GuideToGay.com is Australia's premier LGBTQ website. To stay abreast of all the events and happenings in queer nightlife, entertainment, celebrity interviews, as well as travel and pride updates from around the world, visit GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com is a proud media sponsor of Party Foul Radio.
Hi, it's Matt Matthews, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
This is Alexis Michelle, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
Hey, this is Delta Work, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl, brought to you by Left Magazine.
Hey, guys, I'm Scott Nick, and we're Super Crew, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
I just can't shake this feeling deep in my bones, and though I know I'm better when I'm alone, I call you.
Hey, this is Kirsten, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
I call you. Break a little.
And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. That was screenwriter Michelle Sam telling us about the origin of her short film titled Misconnections. It stars Angelica Ross. It is about the experience of a trans woman who meets a young man on the playa at Burning Man, and then they return to their regular lives only to meet up again and begin a relationship in which she is obligated to tell him about her gender confirmation surgery and her true gender identity. So check that out. It'll be coming to either a film festival or a streaming service near you very soon. And yeah, it's worth your 15 minutes. Go check it out, y'all.
It is.
And it at least brings, I mean, the way I figure it, it's interesting because we've had a 15 minute film that has now had 2 hours of conversation
here
on our podcast. It's very interesting that such a short product can lead to such extensive conversation, but I really think that that's pretty accurate for a lot of things in life. Something that's really, like, doesn't even actually consume a lot can lead to a lot of conversation. Be like, you touched my hair. We're going to talk about this for, like, 2 hours.
Yes.
So, anyway, I also want to give you guys a heads up. On next episode, we have singer Trey Pearson. You can go check him out. His new single called Love is Love is available on YouTube. Watch the cute lyric video about it. He is a former Christian musician who has come out, and his new album, which is called The Good Grief.
The Good Grief.
Not like Good Grief. It's The Good Grief, meaning like versus a bad kind of grief. It's the good kind of grief.
Oh.
The Good Grief is coming out on November 17th. I have had the opportunity to listen to the album. I really like the album. It's very, parts of it are very poppy, but so much of it, it's really cathartic for him as a writer because he writes from this experience of having come out and like sort of, you know, it's one thing for most of us to come out in various capacities in our life, but he's, you know, been from this career where he spent 10 years being a Christian musician, having the support of all these people. And then when he finally deals with his own sexual identity, the shit hit the fan, y'all. And I've already conducted the interview. I was going to try to put it in with this episode, but it's like an hour long and it's so worthwhile. It's such a good interview. So just tune in next week for all of that. And meanwhile, go check out The Good Grief and Love is Love. I think both of those are now available on YouTube. And check out Trey Pearson. Really, really nice guy from Columbus, Ohio. And I'm excited to have him on with us next episode.
All right. So this weekend, we are actually both going to... You are going to be all over the place.
I am all over the place, really. It seems like it. So, but we're actually both going to be at the Lookout on Saturday afternoon.
For all of you in San Francisco.
Yeah, come out and see us, girls, at Lips and Lashes at Lookout. It's the Drag Brunch. Carney's... in New York, I think.
Connie's in New York, so...
Aju is going to be hosting.
She's guest hosting for her, and will be performing alongside Electrocute, her bestie.
Electrocute Monroe. Electrocute and Aju are besties?
Well, I mean, they're, I think she has a few besties, but I know she's one of them.
Oh, okay. So, she's also gorgeous. I remember, like, the first time I saw Electrocute, I thought she was just, like, a woman.
Oh.
I really thought she was just a woman.
That's... She's so beautiful.
Yeah, really, really beautiful. So, and So I'll be performing first. You can catch me if this comes out in time, and it will, and you're in the Bay Area. Come check me out on Wednesday night. I will be at Moby Dick's in the Castro.
Grace Towers show.
Yes, for Grace Towers. It's called Dick at Night. It's one of her new queens. She loves to have me back when she has her new queens shows.
Oh,
she has.
I'm trying to tell you something, girl.
No, girl. It's like what she does. It's really interesting. She pairs two seasoned queens and a number of younger queens. So it provides like a really, like a learning environment in the background, like, you know, in the back room so that we can like help the newer queens out if they, and then during the course of the show, we perform and then we give, helpful tips from our own drag experience and through our own drag career, like things we give helpful motherly or sisterly or, veteran type of advice to, to younger performers. And I've done
that's
this.
Lovely.
It is. It's really, really quite nice. It's a very, it's very fun. And the last time I did it, you know, it's an audience of people that I wouldn't say is necessarily like,
it's a mixed crowd.
Yeah. Like, it's like, it would not be what I would consider people who would necessarily come to see one of my shows, but, I've done really well there and they just embraced me. I love going back. And she asked me to be in her show last month, but unfortunately I couldn't, so this is the first opportunity to come back.
The last time I was there, it was for the Mother's Day show, and brought my little, one of my little tease sisters, as my quote-unquote daughter, to perform with me there. It was a lot of fun. Packed house, so like it seems like they always have a lot of people there.
Well, I mean, it is a very small venue, so if you choose to come out, maybe a little earlier than later because you'll be able to get closer to the stage. But I'm like, it's interesting to me because I am going completely sort of outside of my wheelhouse for what I want to, I've decided I want to perform. Mm-hmm. I discovered this artist. I think she's from Brazil. It's, she speaks, she sings in English, but she's a Brazilian musician, I believe. And her voice is so gorgeous and she covers some old standards from the US. So I'm going to perform one of those, and I don't know what else. And so I'll be there on Wednesday night. I'll be at Lookout on Saturday morning, then Saturday afternoon, I guess, because the show's not until like 1.
Uh-huh.
And then Saturday evening, I will be heading over to 440 in the Castro to support one of our sponsors. Daddy's Barbershop is holding the annual Mr. Daddy's Barbershop Leather Competition.
Oh, right.
And I will be one of the co-MCs with a former Mr. San Francisco Leather and a longtime friend and total fucking hottie, Lance Holman. So come and check us out. Come and support us. It's going to be a good time. And, you know, of course, any opportunity I get to be of help to Daddy's Barbershop, they're so supportive of us here at the podcast. So, oh, I forgot to mention, like, in reference to our sponsors, our Kelly Clarkson interview is going to be on the cover of the next issue of Left Magazine.
Of course.
And there's also, if you're in the Bay Area, so pick up your copy of Left Magazine for November. You'll get to read our Kelly Clarkson interview, and you'll get to see our first ever, hopefully they ran it, our first ever Party Foul Radio print ad.
Oh, cute. Are they using the yellow promo that
I think so. I think so.
Huh. Well, and for all of you that are not in San Francisco, you can check them out online at livedleft.com.
That is correct. Our sponsors down under at guidetogay.com are so lovely also. Go check them out at guidetogay.com. Big shout out to Robert Manzer from guidetogay.com. He's, I think, the editorial director there, and he's super supportive of us and always makes sure that we get to, you know, that their listeners check us out. So just things are just lovely here at the podcast.
Right. 55,000 listens in 3 days, girl.
Girl, we cannot complain, boo. We cannot complain. So everything is great. What else do you have coming up this weekend? Anything other than that?
It's this weekend.
More Asia SF?
I have a lot of like,
I saw that one of your sisters at Asia SF, her mother died.
Naya.
Oh, our thoughts go out to Naya and her family.
Her, yeah, she passed. Her mother passed. And she had to go out to the Philippines because her mom...
She's from the Philippines. Oh, my God. That's girl, that's a bit of a flight.
Yeah, so she flew out there. She's out there now.
Girl, it ain't cheap. I hope that she got, like, somebody to help her out with that. Damn.
Yeah, but I'm sure Naya would have been fine, you know.
Well, I mean, still, it's like $1,200.
It is. It's like $1,000, at least $1,000.
Yeah, it tends to be between $1,000 and $1,200 to get to
the Philippines. I wonder if the airlines would give you, like, some kind of discount if it's for a funeral or something.
Do you know what? They used to, but I think that a lot of them stopped. They used to call it a bereavement fare, and a lot of airlines stopped doing that, and... I mean, I don't know. Part of me just thinks that's shady AF. Like,
it is, because this is just...
Like, you know, everybody knows that, like, if you're going to take a flight somewhere, you better plan that shit in advance so you can get a good fare. Well, you can't really plan when somebody's, like, passes away or whatever of that nature. So, yeah.
Girl.
Shady Filipinos.
It's not the Filipinos' fault. It's airlines,
girl. Well, the airlines. The Philippine Airlines, y'all.
We don't even know if she took the Philippine Airlines. She could have taken plenty of other airlines.
Almost, like, there almost aren't other airlines that go there.
That's not true. Alaska Airlines goes there.
To the Philippines?
Yes. There's China Air. China goes out there. There's a bunch of different.
I think I did fly Qantas or something like that when I.
I think one of even Taiwan's are. Well, one of the airlines says too.
Taiwan Air like flies from Taiwan to Philippines, but not Taiwan Air is very small, so it doesn't. So,
my heart goes out to Naya.
Yeah, definitely. I saw that on Twitter, and our thoughts are with Naya and her family. It's like that's just devastating. You know what? I saw. I wish I can't remember her drag name. The current reigning Miss Gappa. Do you know the?
Who is... It's not Miss Juicy or whatever.
It's not Juicy. It's, I think, whoever is after... What came after Juicy.
I didn't know that there was anyone after Juicy.
Maybe maybe she's not Miss Gappa. I thought she was, though. Anyway, she went to the Philippines recently. She's in the Philippines right now. Or was, like, as of this weekend. And she saw, like, one of my favorite Filipino drag queens, Miss Didi Holiday.
Oh, all right.
And she took a picture with Didi, and she was at the O-Bar over
Miss Didi is big stuff, then.
Didi is fabulous. I love Didi. She's fucking hilarious. And she does a fierce Miss Mariah Carey, so you go on, Didi.
Girl, I live.
You
speaking
do
of,
it.
Speaking of drag, we are getting closer and closer to All Stars Drag Race. If you're linked to their... Instagram account, they're dropping little snippets of each queen every week. Right, so far they've done Chi-Chi Devane, Ben De La Creme, and Aja.
Yeah, I saw something of Aja. Have they announced when they're gonna broadcast that?
It's in December. It sounds like.
Okay, girl, come on now.
So I think Ben said it's definitely in the winter season. So. I don't know when winter ends, but I think it's going to be in December.
December or January. My guess is probably January, but, I would say January because you probably don't want stuff to be broadcasting around, like, Christmas and New Year's, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because people are traveling and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Anyway, good for those bitches. I would love to try to get Ben De La Creme on here.
I love Ben De La Creme.
She's a lot of
such
fun.
A big fan. So creative, so smart, so intelligent.
So sweet.
So creative, like,
so, she's... Yeah.
So talented. Ugh. Girl. Anyway.
All right, you guys. I think we've come to the end of another episode of Party Foul Radio.
Yeah, so like we said earlier, if you're in the city, come catch us at the Lookout this weekend, and you guys can catch me at HSF almost... At least once a week sometime. Find it on my social media.
Follow her at Pearl Tees, bitches.
Yep, and you can follow Poyo at what is it?
The Glamazon PDM. The Glamazon PDM. Of course, follow us at Party Foul Radio.
On both Twitter and Facebook.
That is correct. All right, for episode 91 of Party Foul Radio, I'm Poyo Delmar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
Bye, y'all.
Girl, you better work. It's over.